Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
But this little dink ball, no one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole file.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
All right, so the good news for the All-Ireland final is, well, this is more good news for the club season rather than good news for the All-Ireland final. From the 6th of September onwards, sports stadiums can return to 50% capacity. So you'd be doing well in the county grounds of any county in the country to be doing more than 50% of your club grounds, even for county finals, Aaron. So that's great news for the club scene. The All-Ireland final doesn't affect it too much. I think there's 1,150, 82,500 is capacity. So instead of 40,000, we're at 41,150. So like we're not going to change too much from that. But look, it's a little bit extra at least.
Oh, it is. It's great. I think we only have to look back to the hurling final and even the football semi-finals, and just to hear the crowd, even watching the minor game last weekend against Tyrone and me, that sort of reminded you of the good old days whenever you had that bit of an atmosphere bubbling for, you know, the minor games on before a senior one. So definitely we're all heading in the right direction. And then whenever you compare it to our All-Ireland final series at the end of last year, we're in a much better place, thank God.
A lot of people are saying that the noise they made in the All-Ireland hurling final was piped in, that the microphones were turned up in club. I can't confirm or deny that. I'm not too sure, but it was mind-blowing how loud it was. Larry McCarthy, Brendan, was talking on Morning Ireland this morning, and he was saying in 2019, each county participating in the final got 13,500 tickets. And Mayo and Tyrone for this final are getting 11,450 tickets. Not that much of a difference. It's outrageous. 13,500 in a stadium. I suppose when all the other counties get sorted, the overseas county boards, the sponsors, all that. Like, I mean, it's every other county and every other club in the country that you go to your club and get your raffle and get your All-Ireland tickets. They're the ones getting screwed, I suppose. Mayo and Tyrone, although a lot of those tickets, I presume, will filter back to the counties participating as well.
Yeah, I couldn't care less about them, Willie. I think that's ridiculous. You know, listen, the counties is in it, the people that support the teams, it's their day. I can never get my head around the amount of tickets. Funny, actually, can I open Armagh this year in that first league game back when there was 500 fans, and the real fans at Armagh crowd there, I'm sure you were at the game, they made some noise. It was unreal, but I think that's what you're probably getting back, is that the fans that are there are unbelievably passionate and they're the real supporters. And just go back to 92, you know, the morning of 92, my uncle, he's from Clontibert, Michael Dowd, God rest him, he gave me the ticket. I'll never forget what he said to me. He said, "This will mean so much more to you than me." He was a Galway man that had ended up in Monaghan, you know. And whenever we get the tickets in as GA players, the two tickets a year, every year, hey, I only went to one final in all my time, because if anybody asked for the tickets from the county, I gave them over because of that gesture of my uncle. And right enough, listen, 92, what a day. And I know it's small numbers here, Willie, but even that extra 1,100, you can imagine, particularly obviously the team that wins it, what a special day that will mean to them, you know, individually. So brilliant to see.
No, it definitely is. And I accept the 13,500 or the 11,450. We won't talk about the 11,000 because it's a unique year. I accept that's too low. But at the same time, Aaron, how do you inspire young children from all over the country is going to an All-Ireland final? Like, I mean, I do accept maybe, I don't know, increase it to 20, but you do want every county getting a share, so every child. Because then, if that was the case, Kerry and Dublin are predominantly in every final. So it's just the children in those counties will experience that, you know, that day.
Yeah, funny, Brendan's talking about 92 there. Our minor team went in a great run that year. You would have had Paul McGray and Jamard Myers and those boys, but we would have been at every game that year as well.
Mead beat them, though.
Mead beat them last kick of the game. Never forget it. But we couldn't get tickets, obviously, for that final, but Dad was up with a few of the mates and that there for the sevens and phoned home on the Sunday morning, and Mum just says, Joe, these boys, you may get tickets somewhere. They're going to this final. They're going mad at home. So anyway, he had a few contacts around Croke Park and said, you have to be there for 11 o'clock. And we were wheeled in. Do you remember there used to be concrete steps to the front of the Hogan stand, right in where the cups were being presented? And someone managed to squeeze us in. But again, you said, that's the memories we have. Like, I'll never forget that day. Obviously, it was devastating Armagh losing the minor whenever you're only a child. But to be there for Donegal winning and the atmosphere that there was, you know, that's what gets everybody that you want to be involved in GAA. But on another quick note, the 2002 semi-final Dublin and Armagh was way better atmosphere than the final, because there was way more Armagh supporters added. Like, I'll never forget, the hair was standing in the back of my neck for the final 10 minutes. Everybody was standing up on the ground chanting the Armagh chant, and everyone got behind it. Where the final, if you look back now, it was just a bit more of a damp squib. There was nowhere near the same atmosphere because it was mixed so much with neutral. So it depends. It's a bit like Brendan was saying, you want to have as many of your own people there.
Yeah.
But I do understand, and it has massive consequences for the rest of the country, that you do give them access to All-Ireland final day as well also.
Yeah. We'll agree to 13,500. It's maybe 20-20 and then split the rest or something like that. It seems like a better one. What about this development, Brendan? Tomás O'Shea has gone to be the coach of the Offaly senior football team. John Mahan is delighted. I'm personally thrilled. He said, I'm not too sure if he'd be too thrilled next year when Tomás replaces him as manager. it's like one of those situations where you bring in somebody under you and you're like, here, you need to start watching over your shoulder a little bit here. But like, I mean, it's a great move for Offaly. Division 2 team now. You know, Tomás O'Shea is a huge name, and it's a very big appointment for them.
Yeah, it's like the Kerry crew now are just taking over football, aren't they? Buckley up to Monaghan and then Donaghy up there, man. Everybody wants the Kerry boys, huh? Listen, everything, something happens in Offaly now, I just think of Lowry, and something happens in Limerick, I think of McManus. You're like, who's in the background here? But no, in terms of a football news story, it's fantastic. I mean, I think Tomás, you know, is so well got. There's no doubt he'll have a massive impact. And Mahan, you know, going back to what, 91 with Clare, you know, 30 years on the go, and here he is still, you know, doing his thing. And you think the changes of football, well, there's not many boys can survive that long, particularly in the last 30 years. I mean, 20 years, that the changes have been unbelievable. But certainly, you think of the wee elements, you're always looking for the change, particularly, you know, after a year or 2 years, something that'll come in for a different voice. And that's why I think the likes of McGeaney pulled in the likes of Donaghy. Same way here, and with Tomás, you know, obviously a lot of people start lining him up for bigger and better things if he wants to go down that road. I think, Willie, as I was chatting to you about it's funny, you've two Ulster men on here now after the Sunday game with none on. You know, the whole country is just focused on, sometimes that's the only TV analysis show, and when they see people coming across, well, like, that's a massive part of it. You know, if somebody looks like they can read a game and are tactically right, I suppose they've got a bit of the pedigree straight away. I mean, there's no doubt from his playing days he had it. So, yeah, massive boost to Offaly going into Division 2.
Well, that's the thing. When I always think of Tomás O'Shea, massively respected in the game, a very sound fella who is used to dressing rooms and players will like. That's a huge thing in a coach, and seems to know his stuff football-wise as well. So, like, I mean, for me, and it's a great job for him, Aaron. Like, let's be honest, he sees this probably, he's been over a minor team, he's over an intermediate team in Cork. This is a Division 2 team. He's working under a legendary manager. Let's be honest, Mahan is GAA kind of, you know, he's in that Joe Kernan, you know, class. He doesn't have a senior All-Ireland, but he won a Munster with Clare and then got to those finals with Mayo, and he's been around so long. It's wonderful experience for Tomás.
Absolutely, and I think it is something maybe similar that Kieran Donaghy is doing with Armagh, that he sees an opportunity for him to work with someone like McGeaney, but work with a team who are operating at a really high level. I think they're all looking to build for a bigger day, maybe, where they'll be able to take on a bigger role themselves further down the line. But I think they're going the right way about it, because they're learning, I suppose, the coaching and that there that goes along with it. Granted, they've all played at a high level and been hugely successful, but in terms of managing or coaching teams, it does take a bit of time to build up that, I suppose, wealth of knowledge. You know, not everyone just adapts from being a successful footballer to being a great manager. But I think in terms of what he learned from John Mahon and an exciting new team, I think he'd be brilliant for them. And I've read Michael Deignan and I've read John Mahon. They're really excited about it. The players are. And I think Tomás's his personality, I think, will be brilliant for them, because there's that bit of a rogue in him as well. Like, you know, he enjoyed himself as a player. He was successful. He was dedicated. He did everything that had to be done. But I think his personality will be infectious within that group, and particularly those young boys coming through. Who better to entice them to make sure that they do bridge the gap? Because you can lose players, you know, from successful underage teams to becoming good, top quality senior inter-county footballers, and I think he's a perfect man to come in and try and help blend that there, along with the great work that has gone for a few years beforehand.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, I mean, I'm surprised Leash didn't go in for him. I was thinking this yesterday. Like, I mean, we've tried John Sugrue and Mike Quirk, young Kerry managers with not much experience. We've tried a middle-aged Kerry manager, Liam Kearns, with a bit of experience, and we have tried older Kerry managers like Tomás O'Flaherty and Mick O' with loads of experience. Like, we've had five Kerry managers in the last 5 years. We're trying to chase that Mick O' high, Brendan. I'll throw that to you there, and we just can't rediscover it.
This, you're never going to get away from this Mick O' story. Popping up every show, there's something pops up of it. The legend that is Mick O' with Frankie Street in New York and then for Sporting. But, you know, like, geographically, I suppose, is a big part to do with this. When you think about where, you know, where can players come from that counties maybe don't have? I mean, let's say Donegal, for example, obviously doesn't want a draw manager, or vice versa, if they can help it, or you know, they don't want to go into that. So where do you go? You know, often, I suppose, in terms of where a Kerry manager going to Leash, it's probably in that realm where if he's travelling from a certain part of Kerry, it just about does it. I mean, when you think of Rochford coming up to Donegal, massive commitment, but who can Donegal pull in that has that bit of experience, you know? I don't know what Buckley does in terms of getting Monaghan. I know Donaghy might work in Dublin a couple of days. Sorry if the Armagh treasurer is listening in here and he's putting down Tralee, but he's nice wheels. I know he'd take him up and down the road. Well, I'll tell you that. But a lot of that has got to do with it, how that fits in terms of where we live in the country. Remember, they used to...
Yeah. Well, look,
Dodone used to fly up Paddy O'Shea in the helicopter. Didn't that happen back in the West Mead days?
We'll put it this way. If the price is right, the Kerry boys will travel. Like, I mean, I think that's...
the only thing I would say about Kieran is, like, I assumed maybe he would come in to coach one night a week, but he's there full time. Like, and that takes huge commitment if you're working and you have a young family and you're staying away. You know, and granted, he might be just travelling back to Dublin the next day, but to come up and give that time and effort to Armagh, a county that he has absolutely no allegiance to whatsoever, I think that, obviously, his personality again is top class, but I think it gets a severe buy-in from the players as well, because they're saying, well, if this boy's willing to come up and help and coach us, well, then we need to be taking all from him that we possibly can. So for him to give that level of commitment, it's absolutely massive.
No, it definitely is. So some people were tipping him to replace Peter Keane. We don't know what Peter Keane is doing. I'll throw this one to you, Aaron. Does he deserve another year? I saw Dara O'Shea in the Irish Times saying that the one thing nobody can say is that the players didn't play for him. There's no talk of trouble in the camp or anything like that. He's there 3 years and the squad absolutely believe in him and what he's tried to do. That's not always guaranteed. I would make the point that the players wanted to redeem themselves from the Cork loss. Like, I don't, you know, you could make that argument as well, but I do take Dara's point, because nobody was making a case for Peter Keane. Everybody was kind of making a case, you know, for him to leave.
Yeah, like, there's no doubt, and he is under pressure. I think the underage success that was building, I think everyone maybe felt at this stage that they would have delivered at least one All-Ireland, and ultimately the buck always stops with the managers. I completely get what Dara is saying there. Obviously, there was the rumours last year that there was a bit of discontent in terms of the tactics and that there. There was played against Cork in the Munster Championship. you didn't see anything in terms of, is there any players who are spitting a dummy out here or aren't happy with how things are going. Sunday, like, you would think maybe at times some quarters here Kerry were bet by 10 points. Do you know,
yeah,
the way the narrative has been, like, they could well have snuck a draw and got to penalties, even conceding three bad goals. Do you know, there wasn't a huge amount in it, but tactically there was issues that we were surprised about, stuff that we thought they're not going to make the same mistakes that were done maybe 10, 15 years ago, yeah, and they did crop up again. So that then brings a bit of pressure, because there's no county who'll self-scrutinise like Kerry, and who demand success like Kerry. So from that perspective, I think he will be under pressure. But who's going to line up to replace him? You know, there's not a world of ideal candidates jumping out as far as I would be concerned.
Yeah. Unless Eamon Fitzmaurice. I say the killing part for Kerry is that you're looking at the game and you're thinking of 2008, where Kerry, you know, running down blind alleys and playing into Tyrone's hands and getting turned over. And you're fast forwarding 13 years, Brendan, and with everything we've learned about the game since, and Kerry are getting caught like that. Like, I mean, that'll be killing them.
Yeah, well, you know, you look at some of the defenders, you know, I suppose we couldn't blame Ryan for the goal. You know, Buglet did all right. You know, Sullivan played well. You know, even White, Murphy, I thought he did all right. Well, it was already in the pitch, you know, O'Brien and Moynihan, Geaney, you know, even Paddy Clifford from the season he had. You know, there's just so many performances there, which you thought just weren't good enough at all. And listen, Aaron's 100% right. You know, talking about history being written by the victors, this could have just went either way. I mean, the three goals, the 5 points down without Clifford in the extra time, still coming back, that took a lot of guts,
yeah,
to do that there. But it was as if everything's wrong in Kerry, and there's this big backlash against Keane. And I just felt that we just overcooked it. How many times we see league form will not been replicated in championship? How many times, and anybody listening to this, doesn't matter if you played at any level of Gaelic, you hammer a team earlier in the year in the league, and then you play in the championship. It is always, I don't know how many times this has happened, Billy, where you get such a false sense of the two teams. And really, particularly with the build-up, I think, into the league, because so many teams weren't, maybe other teams maybe were ahead of teams, but we didn't know training, who was training what. I'm not saying people were doing things wrong, but I'm just saying that certain teams might have come in at a better step. Then, of course, Kerry walking through Munster and that. And, you know, you can make what you want of the 5 weeks. I know people are saying it was only a 2 week delay, but that was on top of the 3 weeks they were waiting. Were they a small bit cold? There's so many question marks there, really, but really nothing in it. And I just felt some of the attacks on Kerry were a bit OTT in terms of a drawn game and losing by a point.
Kerry are always going to be like that. And Conan Doherty in The Independent was making the point that they need to lower their expectations. And he said in the 7 seasons since Kerry last won the All-Ireland, they've been beaten in the Championship by 5 different teams: Dublin, Mayo, Galway, Cork and Tyrone. They've actually lost to all 5 of them in the last 5 seasons alone. And I suppose I do take his point, and I understand his point completely. I guess drawing with the arguably the best team that's ever played the game and should have beaten them, that's where the expectations come from. Because I take his point, if that game hadn't happened, you'd be saying, give them a minute, you know, this isn't the end of the world. That's the one that's making them think that this All-Ireland has to happen, because they should have had it that day.
They did, and to be honest with you, I think the day Kerry are lower under expectations that they're going to be All-Ireland champions, well, there should be no football in Kerry. Do you know, the tradition and the history that comes down there, and it is the sport that you want respect in Kerry, you win All-Irelands. That's where you're judged with the greats, and that's the way it always will be. They're never going to lower their expectations, and nor would I expect them to do otherwise. But you're right, the 19 final is was their opportunity for this team to start, I suppose, their journey, their run of picking up medals. And it is one that got away from them, and one that they'll probably ultimately always regret, because it was their opportunity to stop the 5 in a row that their great team couldn't do themselves. But I do think that all Ireland's will come, you know, whether it's next year or whatever.
Can a desperation come about them then? Do you know what springs to my mind? Rory McIlroy in the Masters. Do you know what I mean? Now it becomes a psychological bloody problem.
It does, but I just think there's always that bit of cockiness or confidence within a Kerry player that I think they have enough, and they have enough quality to see it through and to get over the line. Like Brendan said, 5 points down and next to him. Had Clifford stayed on that field, would he been the difference that they would have just got across the line? You know, it went extra time, you know, in terms of you've seen boys going down with cramp and didn't have the same energy or whatever about them. It's not often your games go to extra time, you know, so they will see themselves as still having the quality, still having the ability to see it out in 70 minutes against anybody, any opposition. But I don't think it's...
we've talked about the Ulster thing here a few times. I know the way, if it was the quarterfinals or Super 8s, that the Ulster teams were at a serious disadvantage. I would put Tyrone at a serious advantage this year in the way it's been knockout. They had a couple of real tight games. They had a real tough tussle with Monaghan. Obviously, they got the better of Donegal. But that Monaghan game, I think, pre-Croke Park, you know, a few weeks before that Kerry game, surely it put them in a much better position. So the Ulster thing probably benefited Tyrone this year going into play, Kerry.
And another thing is, too, that see what the best will in the world, and I know they played them in 19, but the intensity that a Tyrone team comes to, like even Ulster club football, you know, I know the difference that there is. Like you can talk about it and you can prep and you can do all the running through stuff, situations in your head of what's going to happen here. It's totally different once you come up against it. And that's an Ulster man telling you that.
Tyrone.
Yeah, just the intensity that they come with. So for those Kerry boys who have absolutely no baggage with them, don't know them, you know, they're only hearing stories about this is what happened way back in the 2000s or whatever. It just comes at them like a train, you know, last week. And they just, I don't know what they're I'm fairly certain that they could have been told, stop running into tackles, you know, don't be carrying in the blind hands. They had to be told that there.
Yeah.
So did they just get knocked off kilter on the day? Did they lose focus?
Do you know what happened? They played Clare, who dropped a lot of bodies back but aren't at the intensity levels. Tipperary played a double sweeper and they got them at threes. Cork were blown away. The level of intensity, like they weren't prepared for that level of intensity, even though I'm sure they would have talked about they will get some bodies back.
Yeah.
And then they'll think, well, we've worked through that.
Yeah.
We haven't worked through Tyrone doing it, I suppose, is it?
And that's massive. So you can talk all you want about it. You can show videos, you can look over whatever footage you want. It's totally different than whenever you're put in that their situation and that heat comes on you in person.
Yeah. The mentality monsters, Steve McDonald called them in the Irish News, Brendan. Like, I mean, that's a nice way of putting, like, I don't know what it is about Tyrone or how they can bring that ferocious level of intensity, but you'd say they're out on their own in that regard.
Yeah, listen, the football nuts, sure, Aaron will tell you all about it. Listen, I travel over the country with my job, particularly Ulster. And funny, the two teams in the final, I think the two counties have a real similarity in that. Mayo were absolutely football mad. You take different parts here of Aaron's county, of Donegal and, say, Derry beside us. There's serious, serious pockets of football and there's serious parts of football, but it's not everywhere. It just feels like every town I call in, because every town is a wee hardware merchant, I'll be in there somewhere and it's football. That's all everybody. Football, football, football. It came through the club championship. I couldn't say for the rest of the country. I could only know Ulster. It was absolutely phenomenal last year in terms of each side going at each other. And I think that's coming through now in Logan and Doher. They've obviously, that togetherness, you think of players coming in this season, particularly like, I say, Chairman McCann and Petey Hart and slugging these boys. They weren't playing well at all, you know. And I was looking around saying, what is wrong with these guys? Like Matty Donnelly as well, McCurry. Like that first game, we were covering it there up against Cavan, and I earmarked Curry as this was a huge season for him because there's no doubt the lad has some talent. He's been in and out. It's never happened for him in championship, and look at the season he's having. And that you have to put all that down to Logan and Doher. I mean, Myler's performance the last day, I've never seen a lad play like that in my life. He won the games of his life with Geary. So some of the performances that from players that just didn't seem to be doing it that has elevated so high. And you know, I've been saying for years, the Tyrone squad is by far the depth in Ulster. They just weren't getting it right in the pitch. That's why Donegal had a bit of an Indian sign over them. You know, that's obviously been cut apart this year. And if you match the Tyrone squad to anybody's in Ulster now, this run has really put them well up there in the head. And they've now become, from the start of the season, just a completely different animal.
I think they almost, Logan and Doher are flying under the radar in that, you see, when Donegal won the All-Ireland is all about Jim McGuinness. There was songs about him, like Jim Gavin hailed as a, you know, mastermind. Even James Horan gets huge credit for the transition and, you know, believing in the team and getting them through. I'm not sure what Logan and Doer, I don't see them getting the same adulation and, you know, as, and I work in GM, I'm reading around, you just don't see that same kind of, they're understated, aren't
Dad
they?
Dad would have got the same with Armagh, you know, and, you know, yeah, really it is, yeah. It's all about the players would want to go out to deliver, but there was huge hype about management, and it was the same with Mickey Hart. But the two boys just seem to be so mellow, you know, so flat tone. It doesn't seem to be any hullabaloo about them whatsoever. But they're serious throne men, like
they're secret assassins.
Exactly. Like I've heard a few things, you know, that Logan maybe he's trying to pacify and he'll try and keep everyone right. Where Duher is probably a bit like he was as a player, you know, he's serious, he means business, and very, very to the point.
Logan
like,
would break up a fight and Duher would get into it.
You want to break up with your woman, you'll call Duher. If you want to get her back, you'll ring Logan.
Yeah, what's your take on the two boys, Brendan? They're a strange couple.
You've called it right. Listen, I was talking to Logan last night, funny enough, a good chat to him on the phone. He's top fella. I scraped there with a boy up in Strabane one time. I could have been in the handcuffs, but the big dog Logan really got in there. I'll tell you what, you would have seen whatever, but I've never seen him in the dressing room, obviously. But see in the courtroom, he landed in there. I was looking a wee bit of bother. Next thing, all was sorted, you know. So, listen, I'll always be in his debt. So he rang up last night. So he's in Downing's a lot in that, and he's an absolute gent. And, you know, that loud nonsense over in the background there, listen, that's not his style or Duher's style. You know, all this crap about the lads and the issues and what's hanging over them. You can tell from the very straight down the barrel, he treats everything very seriously, very honest. I think he's one of those guys, I think what he's doing, unlike in the Hart era, he's let the players kind of be in charge of the team. He's probably involved them in the tactics and has asked them to stand up and be the men and let them take control of the situations. And you can see a massive togetherness. And there's a couple of things I've seen McCurry done this year, for example, where a couple of years ago he would have taken on an awkward shot early in the game. You can just see him dovetail back and wait and wait. And even the last day O'Sullivan was getting the better of him. Late on in the game, when it matters, he comes in the loop for a couple of kicks. And all those wee small things are the difference, you know. So listen, fair play to them. They deserve what they've got this so far. And in the first year, I mean, you talk about O'Shea in terms of experience. I mean, Logan Duher had no experience to get that job. I mean, they won under 21. Sure, they won all Ireland, fair enough, but they hadn't managed it at a senior level. So there was some question marks about that, particularly after the hammering in Ireland. I'll tell you, there was a lot of question marks around these two guys and what they're at. And now look where they're at, all Ireland final. So listen, the two guys, I think, you got to say fair play to them.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, they refused to answer any COVID or vaccination questions at their media day. What do you make of that, Aaron? Like, I mean, go on, you can...
Well, my point of view was it's been well talked about at this stage and everyone sort of knows, you know, roughly what went on. I know people want to know exactly numbers, who to wear, you know. It's none of our business whenever it comes to people's health. Yeah. But I suppose in terms of what we spoke about in the show last week or a couple of weeks ago, it's all about the All-Ireland final. It's all about generating interest, positivity, building up a hype. So what happened in terms of a negative spin regarding COVID, I've no interest in that at this stage. I want to see how they've recovered, how they're moving, have they got a full squad back, what way are things, you know. And I think that's all anyone wants to hear over the next couple of weeks in terms of building hype to the biggest game of these boys' careers and the biggest game of Gaelic football that is going to be this year. So from that perspective, it's probably unusual that a manager will come out in Gaelic games and say, we're just not going to speak about this, so just park it and move on. Yeah. But I don't really have an issue with it at all, because I just want to see what way things are going within their camp from a positive perspective or in terms of maybe changes in personnel or whatever that they have with boys coming back.
Yeah, there seems to be such an appetite in society now for who took a vaccine and who didn't. Like, it's nobody's business. And I would hate for the All-Ireland to be, you know, overshadowed by people demanding to know their own players' own personal business, or even the COVID situation. I'm done with it. I'm not saying, Brendan, that Tyrone don't have questions to answer maybe in 2 weeks' time, because if I was to interview, you know, Fergal or Brian, you might try to corner them on one or two questions that you'd have. But I don't want the next 2 weeks all about that. We did it. It dominated the build-up to the Kerry game. This is the All-Ireland final. There's a time and place. I think they did exactly the right thing. And they did it in a very mannerly way as well, Logan did.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was very sobering last night. As I say, at a chat before going, obviously it was just a personal chat between myself and himself. But, you know, how he was treating that, well, he was talking about the obviously the deaths that came with COVID and the people that he knows and in the area. So even when I say, you think, you know, that we would ever mess about with something like this, there's not a chance. And, you know, just because there's so much nonsense out there, you start to think, well, is there something to that? And then when you talk to to him, and he completely knocks, you know, he talks about that other side, about the serious side of what that is. You completely realise that it's a non-starter as a story. So, yeah, I agree with Harness. Move on, play the football.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, were you two shouting for Tyrone? I meant to ask you, there's a huge tradition. I don't know if this tradition is gone now, but definitely in the 90s, that I strongly remember it, was the idea that all of Ulster, it didn't matter who came out, you all rode, the minute you got down to Croke Park, you all rode in behind each other. Now, has Armagh-Tyrone rivalry in the noughties scuppered that, or the Donegal Armagh rivalry, all these things, does that still happen, or was that a thing that kind of stemmed from the 70s, 80s, when Ulster teams wouldn't have always done too well in Croke Park?
Yeah, well, obviously I was only in my childhood whenever Ulster started to dominate, 91, 2, 3, 4, and then Tyrone in 95, and absolutely every year you would have been following whoever won the Ulster Championship. You've been looking tickets, trying to get the games with Dad and that there. But it did, I think, and I think whenever we look back now in 2000s, like, I think we all went over the top in terms of creating a hatred towards each other. Like, and it was very unhealthy. You could feel it as a player, even whenever you're on the field during those times, and even as a supporter, even before I would have joined the panel, like, there just was it was an over the top rivalry. Have we mellowed? We probably have mellowed a bit. I don't think we're just back there yet. I can't guarantee you that we're back there yet. But it's not as bad as what it would have been. I suppose that's easy for me to say because I'm South Armagh, so I'm the other side of the county. But I think if you're talking to the boys up around Mahery, up around the Loch Shore or the borders of in with the Mai, it might be a different story.
So you shout for Kerry, you just don't all wear Kerry jerseys. You're yeah. kind of mellowing out a little bit.
We just don't put the Kerry flags up outside the house.
What about you, Brendan? Are you still on this? We're all in it together in Ulster in Croke Park thing.
Yeah, I'm a real lover now. Funny Aaron saying there about the Armagh flags. We were supporting the Miners, of course, pre that game. I always remember in 92, you could see the Armagh flags in the round after, and God, and look what happened then after. But to them Armagh boys, so they wouldn't even swap jerseys with you and all. And boy, they became really, they were really driving us for Donegal boys.
It was always the story, the Armagh footballers and the Cork hurlers. They all, like, when they'd go on All-Star tours, they'd be in doing the weights. And I think they built up this kind of mystique about them, Aaron, whether it was a psychological thing or whether it was just pure dedicated kind of fellas. But the Cork hurlers and Armagh footballers, we used to joke, Brendan, about them winning the All-Ireland and going to the gym that night after having won it. But, like, I mean, you know, that was the perception out there, Aaron, wasn't it?
It probably was a narrative, and I think maybe that's, in a way, it might have been the downfall, that it just becomes such an obsession that, like, I think the crack that Tyrone team had, like, do you know, I mind we beat them in the Ulster final replay in 05, and I can remember we went back to the Carrickdale, and there was a lot of boys didn't drink, and a lot of boys, like, taking it very serious, and let's get home and let's get focused on the next game. And then I remember reading that, like, 3 Tyrone players come home in the bus, the whole lot of them went in the beer in Dublin, and they were playing Monaghan in the qualifiers the following Saturday back in Croke Park, and look what happened then. You know,
Tyrone and Kerry celebrated. They definitely didn't go that, you know, over the top.
And I would have to say, if I look back now,
it was too serious.
I probably didn't celebrate the way. No, I'm not saying I would have went mad. I'm far from a party animal, yeah. But I think sometimes it was just, right, we've won that. Let's see what we can go again. Let's see how we can push the bar a bit here. And granted, not everyone in your panel wants to go out and celebrate, let off a bit of steam. But I suppose that Armagh team, you had so many different personalities, like Stevie and McConville and those boys, or say the McEntees weren't drinkers, or Francie was never going to go too mad, or McGray and Mars. But I'm sure there's other boys that would have liked to have let off a bit of steam, and maybe just didn't. And I think maybe the longer you stay in that intense bubble, you know, the more claustrophobic it can become.
Yeah, maybe that's.
We see the way you had non-drinkers there. We had the opposite. We had like about 8 absolute headers that pulled everybody else with them. And, you know, funny. I always remember actually we were in a bar in 2001. Actually, McGeaney was on tour with us, and John O'Keefe was one of the selectors. And Kieran was me and him. The 3 of us were sitting at a table. And we were having a pint, just we were kind of coming round from the day before getting a breakfast, and Kieran was just quizzing John O'Keefe. What's this? What's his trainer? What's this? And I was going, this man's absolutely demented, but he was just fanatical. He wanted to know everything. What you said, what was this, what was that? I remember going, wow, you imagine any Donegal boys paying in the heat to that. They just want to see where the next round was coming from.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt he's an intense, he's definitely an intense character, McGeaney. But that's interesting to know that maybe they went a little bit, because the one thing I do remember, even if I've talked to Muggsy or any of them, like, they were not on in any way drink bans, or they celebrated everything that they won and celebrated after match. They were almost old school that way. Yeah. And very interesting how much they won.
It didn't do them any harm.
It didn't do them any harm at all. Yeah. Absolutely. If anything, it brought them closer together and improves Muggsy's stories too, when if you have a pint with them. Come here, lads, this is another interesting one. Special Congress is on September the 18th. And John Fogarty had a piece in The Examiner. And God, Special Congress has been mooted all this year. We weren't really sure when it was going to be. The fact the All-Ireland's been put back now, so it's going to be a week after the All-Ireland. The All-Ireland's obviously going to have review, and there's going to be a lot of talk about it. So it's basically going to go under the radar. This is an incredibly important Special Congress, because there's two new championship restructures that are up for vote on that day. And we're going to have no coverage. We're going to have no kind of pressure, no lobbying, nothing. It's just going to go under the radar. Unfortunately, there's a third option, and that is to stay at what we're doing, which is the Super 8s and the provincials and all that lopsided. I'm very concerned about this. John Fogarty has got some figures in The Examiner. He says the provincial, the FRC Football Review Committee, who came up with these proposals, have done kind of roadshows and, you know, to gauge opinion, and they've outlined the recommendations. So they got some feedback. And the feedback they're getting shows just 15% endorse the league-based All-Ireland Championship, which is the one I'm strongly pushing, which is the one that I've been going on about for years, where you play the league as the championship and you play seven games against a team your own level, and the four divisions feed into an All-Ireland quarter-final. So everyone has a chance for Sam. And 47% show support for provincial championships, but 4-8s, where counties have to move provinces. And I don't see how that would get any support. But these have to get 60%, Aaron, to get through. And on those early figures, while everyone's distracted with the All-Ireland final, I'm starting to panic here now. And then, like, we've tried to change. So are we Super 8s for the next feckin' 10 years?
Yeah, like, say, the last one you're talking about, where you're looking to move counties to different provinces to level them up, I just can't see that running whatsoever.
Yeah, me neither.
You can try and put whatever pressure you want on, I don't know who they're going to pick out of Ulster. There's obviously going to be someone in West Ulster, which is Brendan's, Donegal, or Fermanagh, maybe the most logical ones because they're closest to Connacht.
Yeah.
Who's going to force them out? Like, are they going to go? Are they going to get the, you know, enough support to send them across? I can't see it. Genuinely can't see it. Everyone wants change, so they're not happy with what we have at the minute. But then you're saying the least opinion or the least support is the other alternative, yeah, then, which is swapping your leagues to be in your championship and your provincial championships to your earlier season competitions. And nobody wants to support that. And yet everybody wants change.
Yeah.
Or so to say.
Isn't it terribly depressing, Brendan, when you think about it, that the players want change? The GPA has said that. That is like one thing that everybody is in agreement with, except probably these delegates that are going to be voting on this. Like, I mean, it really is. To call it, you know, a democratic kind of system, it's not in any way. It's not. It's just, it's desperate.
I suppose what you have is, who's voting on this versus the people that maybe want
that it affects,
to change,
yeah.
I think. Right, that's the whole problem. So you have delegates up there, and you know how slow everything's going to be to move when it comes to such things, and provincials and history. And everyone, I think a lot of the counties, really just outside of the top few, are very afraid of getting left behind. And then even counties from down the lower leagues think that they can put something together. I mean, look at Offaly now, up in the Division 2, Derry back up. So there's a lot of counties thinking that, I think even before they look at the proposal, they think, no, we're going to get frozen out, or we're going to get left behind, or it's the tiers is going to put them out of reckoning for build-up. But see, what your thing is there, Willie, that will always, you know, if you get your house together, you still have a chance. I don't understand why, Willie, a decent proposal like you said there in a league format that gives everybody still a chance that can be given a year. Give them 1 year even to see how it kind of pans out, or 2 years, just to see what the change is. Because, yeah, there's a huge clamour for something different. And I'm sure after Kerry, as we spoke about earlier, they certainly would like a different pathway to a semi-final in one way, yeah, this year.
But even, like, say for instance, if you even up the numbers that is in Munster, so you put a team from South Leinster into Munster, how does that help Waterford, Clare, Limerick, Tipperary to be consistently competing for titles?
Still hammering.
It's not changing things any. Like, no. Where, like I said, if you flip it and you're playing your league football where it's more based on teams who are your level, where you're guaranteed seven games against them, like, if you can't come out of a division whenever you can be told the seven games you're going to play and you're not good enough to prepare and beat them, well, you know, I can't see you winning the All-Ireland then until you sort that. Once you sort that, then you're up into the next level, and you've built a bit of confidence and morale's at a high, and interest within your county is at a high, and then everything grows in that regard.
Yeah, no, that's the truth. Like, I mean,
there's probably a small problem with that in terms of I think just maybe where the league is in terms of the top, say, seven teams, for example, that they've now that bit far ahead that everybody comes up, you know, outside of every other year there's a squeeze where Mayo went down last year. And then this year you've got a time when a couple of teams will go up and there'll be a squeeze next year of what was the top seven. And I know Armagh are back in the mix now. That's one of the differences, I think. But if you looked at the last few years, particularly even the likes of, because we're always looking at Division 1, but Roscommon and Cavan, the way they yo-yoed kind of 4 years back to back, and Meath now are trying to join it, and obviously Kildare. For them to be able to come up and stabilise, it looks like already there's a huge difference between those leagues and teams being able, particularly, to get into the very top league and hold their own.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think Brendan's point on even if you trialled it for a year, because the split season wouldn't have even happened, only they were forced into it. That wouldn't have gotten any support, because it was never tried before, even though we're saying this will work. Mix and matching them doesn't work. Intercounty's gone too serious. They don't want to lose their players. And it's like, yeah, and you still have people clamouring for this. One season. God, that worked great. What? Like, I mean,
we don't like change. That don't like radical change.
No, Jesus, not definitely not. Come here, another story before we finish up here is Seamus O'Shea's been doing media. He was doing some AIB media day. There's a little bit of irony here. Like, he went on, like, I've done a live show with Seamus before. It was up in Parnell's, and Seamus is a very, very smart football brain. He's a clever fella and he's a good talker. So I have no doubt in this interview they spoke about, you know, the match, the Tyrone match. He gave loads of good thoughts on how this might be won and lost, because I know how he thinks about the game and he's very good at stuff like this. But he did make the point during the interview how much attention his brother gets. And he says, it's probably a source of frustration to me, to be honest, because I feel regardless of what happens in a game, Aidan always seems to be the headline for some reason. There's obviously loads of brilliant footballers around the country who'll have good days and bad days, or they'll play in different positions. It's just not the same source of conversation anywhere else. I struggle to understand why there's this obsession and how he plays, where he plays every day we go out. Every headline, every article is about the obsession about his brother. So, like, I mean, he's outlining his annoyance, and that's what every... I think without blowing her own trumpet, Niall McIntyre and Sports Joe didn't go with that headline, but everybody, everywhere else did. Like, he has a point. There's a fascination with Aidan O'Shea.
There is, and to be fair,
an unhealthy one.
Well, the only thing I would say is Aidan might be happy enough that it's still 10 days out from an All-Ireland final, so get it out of the way now and let the football chat to come in that interview, let it all flow out next week at some stage. But there absolutely is, like, and it's harsh on him. Do you know, he didn't have a good day the last day. Do you know, he'd be the first person to admit that there. But even whenever he does well in games, or even whenever he puts himself out there by going back in full back or trying to do his bit for the team, it never really seems to get that much appreciation.
No.
There just seems to be everyone, the smallest thing that he seems to do wrong or the smallest mistake is absolutely magnified. And I can see from if he's talking about a family perspective there, how it could be so, I suppose, infuriating or frustrating for the family, because he's up there to be shot at continuously, and he... Like, he's the captain at the end of the day, so he has to be a very positive influence within that group. Do you know, whether that's younger boys coming through or the link between what players are feeling and management, there has to be so much positive that he's bringing to the group. But no one really ever seems to give him that bit of credit for it. It seems to be a very, very negative narrative around him all the time.
You can give James Horan credit for being a brilliant manager, but never has a knock-on effect on why he would pick Aidan O'Shea as his captain. Like, you know, that kind of gets dismissed. It's all stemming, Brendan, that I can see from that interview that his ex-managers, Connolly and Holmes, did in The Independent that time after the players gave them the shove. They referenced Instagram followers. They referenced the TV show that Aidan wanted to go on. Even though Brendan Maher went on that same toughest trade show and captained Tipperary to an All-Ireland title. You know, Leach Shin went on it. He wasn't the only one that wanted to go on this show. It was in January or February. But this perception kind of stuck that his own managers were talking about Instagram and TV. And that's kind of been where people now latched on to that. And it's like Aidan's more interested in all that stuff. For example, I had a fella on Twitter today tell me, I was tweeting about Seamus doing that interview, and he replied back to me and said, sure, all that lad's interested is in TV interviews. And I said to him, when was the last TV interview he did? And he sent me a screenshot from something he did with Marty Morrissey last year. And I said, if he's so mad into TV interviews, surely you can find me a more recent one than one a year ago. And then he just went quiet. Do you know what I mean?
There's considering he's the captain. Now, yeah. So like if he wanted to put his head up for media, he can do it. Like,
easily.
There's plenty of opportunities there. Or the media day that they had 2 weeks ago, he's the captain. He wasn't even there, because I guarantee you, he said, you know what? Things didn't go well. I'm going to keep my head down. I'm going to train hard. And I'm going to show everyone whenever an All-Ireland final comes around. And that's what you want from your captain.
Yeah.
So he's not media hungry or looking to put himself out there all the day. That's just the narrative that's being portrayed.
What do you think of it, Brendan? Do you think it's coming from that?
The interviews, the managers there, there's been a bit of a spiral thing here where it's almost created its own kind of vortex around O'Shea. And we spoke of this way back, Willie. His sheer size attracts so much attention itself, because people often see somebody that maybe knocks a player over or knocks a player. You know, is he bullying him there? There's almost that side of things. Look at that big lump. You know, and he is. He's an absolute monster of a man. I mean, when he came off the last day, I was laughing. The jersey, it looked like a vest on him. It looked like something you'd see in Aussie Rules. I mean, he attracts that attention, and because then he doesn't play necessarily inside or out, there's always so much chat. Where do we play O'Shea? What's the best place? He's captain. You know, how are we going to get the most out of him? So there's so much being channeled down him, and it's almost spiraled itself, really. And there's been a lot of negativity about it. Of course, then, go back to, you know, players and sessions and that. If you won, you call it then. You can do whatever you want. That's why the Throne Boys were never called into question. Say we lost a final, the Ireland, them lovely lads in Armagh, we went in the sauce then. You were absolutely castigated. So if you look at O'Shea coming up short in the biggest games of all Ireland, people then will look to who didn't perform. He's supposed to be their star man more often than not. So then there's always a bit of kickback that he hasn't done enough. And this is the whole issue with him. But I thought he was quite, I suppose, mature the last day coming off. He was captain, and I liked the bullies as he came back on the pitch, sticking up for his players. Like, even that drew so much question marks, Willie, and I thought, as captain, the game was over. Fair play to him, going out sticking up for his own lads, you know. So it is a lot of nonsense. I do feel sorry for him on it, but hopefully he'll get his reward yet.
Yeah, one thing that completely goes amiss, and it's too often you see people that say, he didn't score, or he missed a simple chance, or, you know, he doesn't take on a shot, or he doesn't want to shoot. But I know from a conversation I had with Tom Parsons a number of years ago, whenever he had picked up that injury, that he said the single biggest difference in the Mayo psyche, or how the Mayo players behaved, was their willingness to work hard, track runners, and the honesty of effort on the field. But that's not something that you can ever throw against Aidan O'Shea, because for a big man, right, he mightn't have the mobility of a James McCarthy or whatever, but he doesn't shirk responsibility in terms of his tackling or his willing to work, turn over a ball, give the ball to a man in a better position. He's not a scoring forward, and he never was, and he doesn't proclaim to be. But in terms of work rate and, you know, just an honesty of effort, that's something that you can't throw against him this past 10
that's
years.
That's what makes it more difficult to understand, because of what he does. You can say off the field, and to be honest, off the field stuff's not that bloody flash, Harry. I did see some mobile phone repair ad he did before the feckin' semi-final. I'm glad he did it before it and not after, because if he did that after, I'd say, where's this fella's head at? He's running around the beach like David Hasselhoff, right? So now, I would have said no to that. I'm probably not buff enough to do it. I remember years ago when I was just breaking on the scene, I had indie hair, and the Star newspaper wanted me to pose in a leather jacket and a guitar. And I said, but I don't play the guitar. No, we just think you have that look. And I said no to that young enough, because I went, jeez, I know, yeah. But, like, I mean, the reality is, the stuff he does, they'd always be there. But the stuff he does on the pitch, you can't ever criticise him being flash Harry. He's the opposite of that. He's selfless, he's hardworking, and that's very clear for everyone to see. So don't get the joy people get.
But he never gets credit for that, though.
No.
It's just like, gosh, that's expected. But whenever Mayo were losing All Irelands in 04 and 06, that's what their downfall was. Now, you can still say they're not getting across the lane, but they've come up against the greatest team that's ever played the game. But that side of his game is top class, and that's what filters through everybody else. So if he's the captain and that's what he's doing and that's the example he's setting, well, it's infectious then, and it goes through the rest of the squad. So it is something that just gets completely glossed over because he's not scoring 1-4, 1-5, you know, outrunning boys from one end of the field to the other. Like Brendan says, he's a huge man, an absolute man mountain. So he's never going to be able to do that there because genetically it's just not going to be in him.
Yeah.
But he does so much more positive, which is obviously the reason why he's named as their captain.
Yeah, so we'll have to apologise to Seamus O'Shea for spending the last 5 minutes talking about us.
But it was a positive slant.
Maybe a more positive slant. Right, lads, we'll leave it there. We'll come back with Oisín O'Neill. So delighted to say Oisín O'Neill joins us on the show now. How's it going, Oisín?
All good, Colin, and yourself?
All good here. Come here, so we were talking on the show with Aaron and Brendan about how Ulster teams all support each other, you know, when they come out of Ulster. So can you confirm or deny that you were shouting for Tyrone on last Saturday?
I'd probably deny that one, Colin. you know, but in all seriousness, you probably have to really respect what the Tyrone lads did. Like, when it went down there and no one... or very few people give them any chance of even giving Kerry a game, you know, and the performance I put in, it was definitely impressive.
But I'm sure it gives Armagh confidence, Monaghan confidence, Donegal, all the Ulster teams to see that you're so close to Monaghan. I'm sure you played that game in your head where you were so close to Monaghan so close to Tyrone, then Tyrone can beat Kerry.
Yeah, definitely. And it shows probably that there's not a kick of the ball between any team in Ireland at the minute, like going on that form line. Like you say, we were really close to Monaghan, and then Monaghan ran Tyrone right to the wire in Croke Park. And even the league game that we played against Tyrone, like, we missed a penalty just before the second water break. And if we had a score that, we were 5 points up, you know. So that was probably a big momentum turner in that game as well. So, but it's all ifs and buts.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking, looking at the game, there's some similarities between Kerry and Armagh. Like, you like to kick the ball, you like to kick in game, and you're maybe not as good, well, maybe up until this, you're not as good at other teams at playing, you know, those kind of stalemate games where you've got the 12 versus 12 in a kind of confined space.
Yeah, I suppose that's something that would have been levelled at us, and definitely was in the past, that we struggled to break down a blanket defence. But the more that we've come up against it, and it's something that we've worked really hard on and trained really, really hard, is how we're going to break down those defences. You know, there probably is a way of playing against them, and I think that in the last couple of years we sort of seem to figure that out to a certain degree, and we're able to penetrate those blanket defences that you do come up against. Although they are defences in as a whole probably aren't as defensive as they have been in the last couple of years. You know, you can definitely notice that there's a little bit more space there for forwards, and you get your opportunities to get the ball kicked in a little bit more.
That's the thing, from me looking at it, the opportunities to kick are there, but teams are pressuring, like, you're not allowed play around the outside of the defensive shield like you did maybe 2 or 3 years ago. Like, teams are pressing and putting pressure on every man nearly that has the ball.
Yeah, I think that comes from, like, most teams seeing that you were going to need 20 points at least to win the All-Ireland. And if a team has the ball on the outside of your defensive screen for 2 and 3 minutes, like, it's eating the clock, and it's taking up a lot of your time to get scores, you know?
Yeah.
So both teams want the ball, and it's about how quickly you can win it back and then transition back up the field.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Another one about that game I want to throw at you, because you're obviously involved in it and you're analysing this stuff all the time, and I'm very interested in these short kickouts. And we know Kerry won every single one of their kickouts, didn't really win them. You know, a lot of them were uncontested, and then they wasted a lot of energy running up the field, carrying it. And because, you know, they were carrying it up the field without kicking it, they were, you know, facing those stalemates. And I'm just interested, did you do any analysis on, you know, a very low-risk short kick-out, but what is the end result of that kick-out? You know, what you face at the other end versus a more risky long one with the chance of getting a couple of one-on-ones off the long one?
Yeah, but I think the problem that Kerry saw at the weekend was if they had a kick long on top of Moore and Barry, that Tyrone had flooded back, so they were going to... you know, on the break ball, they were probably going to be outnumbered maybe 4-5-1.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think that, so in that situation, like, you probably are better taking, you are better taking your possession, the guaranteed 100% kick that is on. Although probably the thing that Kerry struggled with was then getting their second pass away. Their midfielders then weren't available for a kick pass, which I think could have really saved them a lot of energy. And you've seen at the end of the game, both Foley and Tom Sullivan, was it, that both of them had cramp towards the end of the game, like, because they'd ran so much ball. And both of them had played really well defensively before that, but then it was the on-the-ball stuff that I think got to them at the end.
I think I was reading the stat, I was saying to the lads that Gavin White, he cramped as well, and he had 28 possessions and didn't kick it once. I suppose when you go to the corner back, the secret is you have to kind of make up that ground with a kick.
A kick, yeah, or else you'll gas. Like, and especially a lot of games, you know, your cornerbacks aren't used to carrying that ball as much as a halfback or a midfielder. So it's a bit of a shock to the system for them as well.
Right. How much thought and meetings and talk goes into all this, Oisin?
Hours and hours and hours.
You don't sound enthusiastic when you
answer. No, I am. It's probably one part of the game that I actually love is the video and the analysing and seeing how you can do this better and do that better, you know. But it's time consuming, like it is. But I think the vast majority of inter-county footballers now, they know that that's part of the gig.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, then you're probably not going to be able to perform. Your team's going to suffer, and you're not going to be able to perform as well as you do. Like,
I'm sure all those tactical meetings are very well run now, and you have all that software where it's bang, bang. But, you know, you're hitting the area and you're discussing. It's not when I was playing Oisin, we'd watch the whole match from start to finish, and we wouldn't even stop it. You know, it's moved on.
Like video. When you go to training, like, there's probably an expectation you already have watched the whole game back twice, and then the management and the senior players will pick out like clips, so you might have 10 or 12 clips to go through in a night. That, like, some of the clips could only be 10 seconds, some of them could be a couple of minutes. So usually, you know, your video sessions are done half an hour, like, which is good, but then away from the group and that, you there will be an expectation that, you know, you're watching your own video and you're making your own analysis and you're linking in with each other that way.
Right. Okay. So we're obviously coming off two brilliant semi-finals and extra time, but arguably the game of the championship was yourselves and Monaghan. Have you had a chance to analyse that, or have you looked back at it?
Yeah, I've watched it a couple of times back now, and it doesn't get any easier, I don't think.
Like, I suppose there's elements that you would be proud of, though. Like, I mean, to concede four goals, come back like he did. Like, obviously, the four goals are a bit of a disaster, and how you didn't see out the game. But there's lots of the middle part, I presume, you'd be happy with.
Yeah, like, I suppose going into that game, we had lost Blaine, our keeper, the Wednesday night. Like, our last training session was the Wednesday night before the game, so we only had maybe 20 minutes of game scenarios or gameplay that night to really work. And to be fair, Shea, who came in, did an outstanding job, like his first senior appearance for Armagh, he was brilliant. And we also lost Aidan Forker, or he had been injured and just wasn't fit to play the full game. So if you take out your goalkeeper and your fullback from any team, you know they're going to struggle. But I think we adapted really well. And the most pleasing thing probably about that day was that we never panicked. Like, in the past, if that had happened to us, we would have completely lost our heads and it could have ended up any score, you know. But we stuck to what we had talked about before the week, and what we knew. We'll get a show in that game, and eventually it worked. Like, and you could see the impact that we got off the bench. A lot of younger fellas, the likes of Tierney Kelly and Ross McQuillan, Turbo, they all came on and got scores and really lifted us. And then, but the last couple of minutes then was it was poor from us. Like, we should really have seen that game out. You know,
you call Ross McQuillan Turbo. I presume Turbo is for his.
No, Turbo Connor Turbo.
All right, sorry. I thought it was Turbo because he's so fast.
Yeah, no, but both of them are fast, mate.
Yeah, okay, fair. Like, I mean, I suppose one thing about Armagh this year is that, like, anytime I read interviews from Armagh players, you're talking about consistency. And I remember it was a big kind of word coming out of the Galway camp maybe 2 or 3 years ago before they maybe took that step up, made an All-Ireland semi-final. Just be consistent. And that's one thing you definitely did get this year, Oisin, like, between the league, like, playing the top teams. You know, it's a shortened season, but there were consistent performances.
Yeah, consistent performances, and like that's something that we've struggled with for probably I'm there 4 or 5 years now, and we have struggled to do that. And then in that period, is be consistent and be probably be reliable and do the same things day in day out. But that comes from a lot of hard work. Like we in lockdowns and that, we had put in a lot of work individually, like on our own. And I think when we had that work, you could see the difference in our fitness levels. So one game wasn't taking as much out of us as it has in previous years. Sometimes probably we just didn't get the opportunity to train as hard and get the work that the management would have wanted us to do done.
Right.
So this year, whenever the last couple of lockdowns, like we worked really, really hard on our own. And I think that stood to us in the long run. And then I suppose the freshening up with the management team and the two Kearns, McKeever and Donaghy coming in as well really helped us to, like, they brought something new and a freshness, like, to the whole setup and put real demands on us. They were very demanding of us each day we went out, and we had targets and goals to hit, and we knew if we hit them goals and targets, like, that we wouldn't be far away in any game, no matter who we were playing.
Right, okay. And like, what about your role then in the team? Like, you're predominantly midfield. You spent a bit of time in full forward, but I notice even you could, any of you pop up at full forward. It could be Jarlath Oge, it could be yourself, Mernon's in there, you know, Grimley could be in there. Like, is that, you know, ghosting in there for a long ball? I presume, like, that's something you work on.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And especially, it's been a big focus of Kieran Donaghy since he came in with us, is that we are always trying to rotate so that, it's not even rotate so that you get a score, it's rotate so you nearly get a break. You know, the modern game, it's so energy intensive that you burn so much energy, and you might just need them two or three minutes on the inside just to get your breath back, you know, where you don't have to go chasing the full length of the field. And I think that's something that has worked really well for us, and especially with some of the players that we have, like a lot of us are all comfortable playing anywhere from 8 up, so it makes sense to do it, you know.
Yeah, a lot of versatility in there. Talk to me about these few kind of maybe 1970s, 1980s bombs that you threw in against Antrim.
It was just something that we maybe had identified in video analysis that we thought we could get some joy out of, but probably on the day we just didn't. We were annoyed ourselves because we didn't do what we were told to do and didn't execute what we were told to do. It probably went to our heads a little bit, and we got obsessed then with hoofing the ball in, like, really aimlessly, whereas, you know, that wasn't the plan. We should have been working it a little bit closer and then trying to deliver a good quality ball, you know. And it was something that we worked on pretty hard for the 2 weeks before the Monaghan game, and then we did get a lot of joy from our direct ball into the full forward line that day.
Yeah, yeah, it was a lot more controlled ball you were giving in that. But yeah. Rian's like, gives a crazy pass off the outside of his boot. He can give a controlled ball nearly from his own 45 in there.
Yeah, yeah, and like, to be fair, we're probably lucky. We have a lot of good kickers with the ball, like who can put it on a sixpence, you know, and that's important for the team and the way that we want to play. Like, so, like we talked about Kerry there, that they were struggling. Like, we want to have good kickers all over the field so that we can move the ball really quick through that transition.
Yeah, and like, I mean, that must have been very kind of pleasing against Monaghan in that you scored 14 points and a half, predominantly kicking it and going, yeah, this actually works. Because a lot of time in Ulster football, that game plan doesn't always work. But I know from watching Monaghan, they don't play a full-time sweeper. Darren Hughes tries to get back, and it's just basic logic that if you kick it, you'll get it down there before he gets down there.
Yeah, exactly. And especially then, we were getting good joy off our long kickouts in the second half and that, so that made it easier just to, you know, get the ball up the field that little bit quicker.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We know you come from a good pedigree anyways. Like, that's well documented. Your father, Garrett, he played for Armagh and Louth, and your mother is Oisin McConville's sister. Like, I mean, you didn't lick it up off the ground, as the saying goes, but I was interested in yourself and Rian going training when your father was playing with Cross and then he became the manager. And I can picture the two of you, because I've seen it in Portlaoise and Laois, where the manager's, you know, sons are kicking around and then you end up playing with them or seeing them play. Yeah. You know, just kind of falling in love with it by going up to the field with your father.
Yeah, the mother, she used to be going mad at us that we weren't at home doing the homework and the schoolwork. Whenever, like, dad would be saying, "All right, I'm going to train there," and we'd be jumping out into the car, like, you know, and she'd be shouting out the door after us, "Get back here, get back here." But yeah, it's what we've loved to do from we were no age. And I think in Cross, there's not much else that you can do. Like, there's no soccer team, there's no rugby team, no hurling team, there isn't a swimming pool or anything. So, you know, in Cross, you really have only one choice, like, you know, unless you go into Dundalk or in Uri. So, we loved it, and we always loved, like, all the older boys, you know, would always been really good to us. And you know, after training, kicking the balls back out to them and all, sure, they were our heroes growing up, and that's what we love to do. So, and now hopefully there's another generation coming in behind who are the exact same.
Yeah, I'm sure the free takers loved you anyways.
Yeah, they did. You can ask Aaron there about the amount of balls that kicked back to him over the years.
And you're happy to, usually that's a terrible job, but you're only delighted to do it.
Oh, only delighted, yeah, sure. What else? You know, that's what we want. And then you maybe got your couple of shots at the end when they had all cleared off, you know, and you thought that was you happy for another couple of days.
Yeah, it's interesting. What would happen in Cross McGann if you decided to start up a soccer team?
There's an adult, like, pub team or, like, a real local soccer team, you know.
Right.
And some of the boys do play, but a lot of the young fellas now actually go into Newry and Dundalk, and it's probably good for them that they're getting to see other sports, and it's having their footwork and all that. Like, the more sport we can get any young person playing, is definitely beneficial for them.
As long as it's only beneficial to their Gaelic football career.
Speed their footwork up and then they come back and they're dancing around all the defenders.
Kamira, I was reading as well, I think it was an interview with Rian, who said that yourself and him would be very competitive, and there was a stage across McGlen where you weren't allowed to mark each other.
Yeah, probably because neither of us would defend. I think that was the problem there. Both of us just going one way.
Would you be getting stuck into each other?
Ah, yeah, even around the house there. Sure, you know yourself, any siblings, like, there's that little bit of a rivalry there. But it's all in good nature too.
Yeah, no, true. And come here, how good is Aaron? He's a minor now.
Aaron, he played for the county minors this year. And he's still minor again next year, so he's going all right. He probably has a bit of growing to do. And he fell out hopefully in the next couple of years, but he has all the skills. It's just where he wants to put the hard work in to get to the top level, you know.
Right. Okay. It's hard to believe he has some growing to do when you see the size of yourself and Rian.
Yeah. Well, we both probably didn't stop growing until we were 18 or 19. So we were lucky, you know. Growing up, we were always tall, but we weren't overly tall now. And then we would have spread it up quite late.
Ah, okay.
So hopefully he does the same.
So there's three brothers, yourself, Rian and Aaron, and that's it?
No, and then we have, there's a poor fella, Dara. He plays for Cross as well. He's only after turning 18 there, so hopefully in the next couple of years he'll be playing with the seniors and that as well.
Jeez, right, very good. It'll be interesting to see all four of you. Come here, before I let you go, who are you tipping for the final now, Mayo or Tyrone?
Tyrone, I think they just have the 2 week break will suit them nicely, and they'll just have that little bit of momentum behind them. I think Mayo's momentum might have been killed a little bit by the four weeks, isn't it? They will have played. Yeah, I think 2 weeks is just nice for any team to get recovered in the first week and then the next weekend just go hard at it. And I think Tyrone maybe might just have a little bit more off the bench, like Cahill and Derek Hanavan. Mark Bradley, they have some good options off the bench there.
Yeah, I think your own Stevie McDonald called Tyrone the mentality monsters we were mentioning on the show. Like, I mean, it's a good kind of way to describe them.
Ah, yeah, you have to hand it to them. They definitely went about their business well at the weekend. Like, but it'd be interesting to see. Like, Mayo were very, very impressive in the second half against Dublin, but if they play, if Mayo come out like the first half against Dublin, I can't see Tyrone letting them back into the game like the way Dublin did.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. It's definitely a 50-50 game. I'm sure
most people
would agree anyway. Oisín, come here, I've taken up enough of your time. Thanks very much for taking the call.
Cheers, Colin.
Great stuff from Oisín there. Right, that's it for today. We'll be back next Thursday where we're going to start to build up to the All-Ireland final. So we'll preview that then. We'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
But this little dink ball, the only one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole file.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Caffrey, you Free State bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.